Good morning, and welcome to Federated National Holding Company's fourth quarter and year-end 2016 financial results conference call. My name is Andrew, and I will be your operator today. Please note that today's call is being recorded. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Statements in this conference call that are not historical fact are forward-looking statements. Without limiting the generality of the foregoing, words such as anticipate, believe, budget, contemplate, continue, could, envision, estimate, expect, guidance, indicate, intend, may, might, plan, possibly, potential, predict, probably, pro forma, project, seek, should, target, or will, or the negative thereof, or other variations thereon, and similar words or phrases or comparable terminology are intended to identify forward-looking statements. The matters discussed on this call that are forward-looking statements are based on current management expectations involving risks and uncertainties that may result in these expectations not being realized. Actual events, outcomes, and results may differ materially from what is expressed or forecasted in forward-looking statements made on this call due to numerous risks and uncertainties, including, but not limited to, the risks and uncertainties described in this conference call, our press release issued yesterday, and our other filings made by the company with the SEC from time to time. Forward-looking statements made during this conference call speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Federated National Holding Company specifically disclaims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement to reflect new information, future events, or circumstances or otherwise. During the Q&A session today, if you would like to queue up for a question, you may dial star, then 1 on your keypad. Feel free to dial star 1 at this time if you're interested in asking a question early. Now at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Michael Braun, Chief Executive Officer and President of Federated National Holding Company. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today to discuss Federated National Holding Company's fourth quarter and full year 2016 financial results. I'm joined on the call by Eric Fernandez, our Interim Chief Financial Officer. Our financial results can be found in our earnings press release. I will go over some brief highlights, and then we will open up the line for questions. Q4 2016 highlights, as measured against the same three-month period last year, except where noted. 9.5% increase in gross written premiums to $137.1 million. 9.8% increase in Florida homeowner policies to approximately 279,000. 39.3% increase in total revenues to $88.6 million. 47.6 million increase in gross written premium on our personal automobile line of business to $69.5 million in 2016, compared to $21.9 million in 2015. $47 million of gross claims from Hurricane Matthew, which impacted Florida and South Carolina, a decrease from the initial estimate of $77.5 million. $21.4 million of claims net of reinsurance from Hurricane Matthew. $30.6 million increase in our total loss reserves during the quarter, which increases our total loss reserves at December 31st, 2016, to $158.1 million. Net loss of $12.1 million or 89 cents per share. Book value per share, excluding non-controlling interest, of $16.26. The quarter's results were impacted by $21.4 million in losses, net of our reinsurance programs, related to Hurricane Matthew, which impacted Florida and South Carolina in the month of October. The $21.4 million impact is made up of an $18.45 million retention from the excess of loss property catastrophe reinsurance, $2.3 million related to the reversal of the profit sharing balance on a 10% Florida-only property quota share, which was previously recognized as income since the inception of the reinsurance treaty, $400,000 in losses from Monarch National Insurance Company, and $250,000 from the 10% of the losses from South Carolina's $2.3 million gross loss, which were not covered by the Florida excess of loss quota share agreement. The year was challenging for the company based on significant increase in losses from multiple weather events and separately from the inflated cost of handling homeowner claims in Florida, primarily as a result of the growth of assignment of benefits, or AOB. Federated National Insurance Company had an average statewide rate increase of 5.6% that had been in effect since August 1, 2016, and has recently filed and requested another rate increase of 6.5% to be effective August 1, 2017, which should gradually offset the increased costs associated with AOB claims. Our fourth quarter results reflect continued revenue growth as well as strong organic growth in both written premiums and policy counts, in our homeowners Florida and non-Florida business segments. We have expanded our non-Florida homeowners program with the recent addition of Texas, where we wrote our first policy in February 2017. Our written premium growth is the result of continued high retention rates driven by our commitment to servicing our policyholders. Our partner agents placed $30.5 million in new Florida homeowners premium, $3.1 million in new non-Florida homeowners premium, which with our other lines of business and our renewed business during the quarter totaled $137.1 million in total gross premiums written. With that, we are glad to open up the call to your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a brief reminder, if you would like to queue up for a question at this time, you may dial star and the number one key on your keypad. If your question has been answered or if you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. We'll be taking our first question from the line of Arash Soleimani from KBW. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Arash.
Good morning. So just start off with a numbers question. Can you provide prior year development and also current accident year development, and also let us know what drove those items, if there was any? Like if it was
AOB
or something otherwise.
Hey, Arash. How you doing? Good morning. Yeah, so
morning.
In Q4, from a prior development, we had $1.6 million of prior development split between CGL and Homeowners Florida. Both of those related to calendar year pre-2014 and weren't related to AOV. And then from a 2016 2016 accident year, the biggest thing you'll see is we strengthened our reserves around one specific auto program to the tune of about $1.5 million in Q4. So that was the other kind of outlier item in our losses outside of obviously Matthew.
Okay, so you said no AOB in any of the numbers, right?
Correct.
But Arash, to clarify, we're clearly have a higher attritional loss ratio that's been driven by AOB.
Right.
No, understood. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't prior year or current accident year strengthening related to that. And is the attritional increase, I think you mentioned in the release, the $5 million, and that seems to be kind of in line with the 6 points of additional growth that you mentioned, since you also did increase the attritional in 4Q15 a bit?
Correct. There's no change in our attritional loss ratio related to 2016 accident year.
Okay.
We continue to be at 36.1%.
Thank you. And my other numbers question was around the gross earned. Can you provide the breakout of gross earned between homeowners, auto, or just what it was for those two lines of business?
So homeowners in Q4, all homeowners, $127.8 million.
Okay.
And then auto was 18.7.
Seven. Thanks for those numbers. And the other question I wanted to throw you guys is, you know, Allstate has mentioned that, you know, they're reentering Florida, I think, in April of this year. You know, what implications does that have for your partnership with them, and does that imply additional, you know, pricing competition in Florida?
Yeah, Raj, I spoke with the folks at Allstate yesterday. We are aware of that. We can't specifically tell you what their intentions are, but it appears that they have a limited appetite, and their pricing is not the most competitive. So they definitely have some desire to be in Florida with Castle Key. We'll monitor that, but I don't see that as a game changer or a big threat to our distribution through our voluntary agents or our business with Advantage, which is Allstate's general agent.
Thanks. And along those lines, do you think the new RMS model that's coming out is going to have any impact on competition?
Well, yes. I think it's going to impact the industry. We've been RMS heavy for a number of years, I think most of our competitors are much more air-driven. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's a dramatic change, RMS, but clearly that will impact people's exposure that you have to purchase reinsurance with and your pricing. So I don't think it's going to be a big impact, but it's another movement within the Florida property space.
Okay, thanks. I have some more questions, but I'll recue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sam Hoffman from Lincoln Square. Your line is open.
Good morning. I just had a question on your long-term objectives. Do you think that the rate increases that you filed, which I guess are 5.6% this year and 6.5% now for 2017, do you think those are going to be enough to get you to the 15% ROE objective once they fully earn through, I guess, sometime by the end of 2018?
Sure. Good morning, Sam. And to answer that, when you look at our loss ratio, our loss ratio has moved from approximately 29.5 to 36, which is about 6.5 points. 6.5 points on a $465 million book is $30 million. So what have we taken? We have taken rate of 5.6%, which has had pretty much no impact in Q3. Let's call it $500,000 of earned premium, of additional earned premium. Q4, let's call it about, less than $2 million. By the time we get to Q3, I think you're looking at about $6 million in a flat book just off that additional rate. So I think we're looking at that rate generating about over $25 million of premium, additional premium in a flat world. What expenses are associated with that? Really, acquisition. So you're talking about, let's just call it 12-13% to the retail agent. That additional premium will not affect our reinsurance spend, nor will it affect our attritional loss ratio. So the 5.6% is huge, absolutely huge. We're well underway. In addition to that, we have filed for 6.5%, which should bring $30 million of additional premium into the company. Once again, the only cost associated with that is acquisition, the only additional cost, I should say. That is huge. Now, this premium, as we bring it on the books, takes time to earn out. It's painfully slow. And when you identify that you need rate, and when you prepare your filing, and when you submit it to the OIR, and you review, they review, and then it goes back and forth, and then you go ahead and if whatever they approve, and then it gets programmed, and then it goes into the policy. It's terribly, terribly slow. It takes really about 2 years. We're well down that path. We're well about a year down that path where all that work has been done, and one rate is already in the books, earning out gradually, and the other one should come online. Do I believe those rates are correct? I think that is sufficient rate with all available information at this time. If AOB is resolved in the legislative session in 2017, perhaps we can give rate back. If AOB is not resolved, I think additional rate may be needed. And if AOB, which appears in our book to be plateauing, it appears not to be getting worse, and it appears that it's actually slightly improving, if that's the case, our rates should be sufficient, may be sufficient, and we're going to continue to evaluate that. But the other question that you might be asking is, what does this rate do to our book and our competitiveness? We believe that we are competitive. We see multiple carriers taking rate. AOB is an industry phenomenon, and it's hitting everybody, and it has taken about $600 million versus prior year in the industry, $590 million, which is significant. So I believe we remain competitive, and I believe these increased costs associated with AOB are pushing up our rates, and we have no choice but to raise the rates to pass through those expenses, unfortunately, to our policyholders.
Okay. And do you believe, just following up on what you just said, do you believe that you can grow through this, including the rate that you're taking, and obviously, and you had new good new business in the quarter, but the renewals, you kind of gave up a bunch of policies, it looked like. So, I mean, do you believe that you could continue decent growth, you know, through this period?
Yes. However, let me clarify. Currently, we're writing in Federated National approximately $2 million a week of new business. So if you have just real quick math, an existing $450 million book, and let's just use 10%, that means we have to, you know, just through evaporation, we lose $45 million. If we're writing $2 million a week times 50 weeks, that's $100 million. Just off that, we should have growth of, let's call it $50 million on an annual basis. Obviously, things change on an ongoing basis. So the answer is yes. Will we have the growth of growing by 100, 150 million, 200 million, some of these huge numbers that we had in the prior years? The current math would say no. However, this market's in flux, and I'm not. I believe there will be ample opportunities in the voluntary space for us to write business, perhaps at a greater rate, and or other situations that may come about. A lot of people have been impacted in this industry. You don't just take $590 million into the industry and not have that impact carriers. It's going to impact carriers. That will create opportunities either through scenarios where we can create additional value short-term, when I say short-term, quickly, with some of these other carriers, or our tried and tested method of writing voluntary. So yes, I believe we're competitive and we remain to be so. And I reiterate and remind you that we are a destination source to most of our agents. They want to place the business with us, and we need to be competitive. Also, our distribution is unique, that we have the great partnership with Allstate. We have the great partnership with GEICO here in Florida and a lot of other preferred carriers. So, yes, Sam, the answer is I believe our growth will continue. It's just a matter of what that growth rate will be.
Okay, my last question is, I mean, there are a number of one-time items in the quarter. I mean, obviously the deferred tax adjustment, the caps, but there's one thing I didn't understand is the $8 million of increase in expense from unwinding the quota share. Is that a one-time item or is that an ongoing item?
Sam, yeah, this is Eric. So the $8 million that we mentioned on the press release has to do with the fact that in Q4 of 2015, we had additional ceding of commissions as the 30% property quota share was in place at that time. In this quarter, we don't have that. The 30% the treaty has ended, so that's not in place now. So we're ceding a lot less commission. So when you compare Q4 2015 to this current period, just that alone shows that we have an additional $8 million of expense when it's really just a reinsurance item.
Sam, let me step in on that. You know, there is a lot of movement on the income statement between the quota share that we had in place, the 30% plus the 10%. But let me just compare 2015 and 2016. 2015 pre-tax, we made $65 million. 2016, zero. Okay, where did that money go? Two things. A 6.5-point increase on our attritional loss ratio on $465 million Florida book, that's $30,200,000. And then Mother Nature in 2016, net 34.5. Those two numbers combined equals $64.7 million. So yes, there's absolutely a lot of accounting, and I'm sure you're gonna have some follow-ups. I'm sure you'll reach out to Eric to go deep on. But rest assured, those are the two items. Now, in terms of Mother Nature, that's what we're in the business of doing, and I make no apologies to that. In terms of AOB, the shareholders need to understand what we're going to do. We're taking rate. I'm not certain that legislation will pass that will improve the situation. We're taking rate, which is appropriate. And those are the two items by far that impacted us in 2016. What will happen in 2017? I can't tell you specifically as it relates to Mother Nature. As that unfolds, we'll share that. But in terms of rate, as I indicated, $25 million rate increase from last year will be earning out 100% correct in August. That's huge, and I think that's the focus of what we're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next, Our next question comes from the line of Samir Kar from Capital Returns Management. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I see that you're saying that you're raising price to help offset some of the AOB pressures. But what are you guys doing in terms of shutting down zip codes, enhancing underwriting claims operations to help mitigate the problem? And Mike, I think you've said in the past that you're willing to shut down agents that are providing bad business. Have you canceled any of agents as of yet?
Yeah. Well, good morning, Samir. A couple things. We have not shut off zip codes. You've heard Dade and Broward being cut off over and over in the industry. That is not the case with us. We underwrite the business, and I would actually argue some of the most profitable business you can write in the state of Florida is in Southeast Florida, which is Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. AOB is a huge problem, and it is an expense. The claim on an AOB is twice a non-AOB claim. So what we're doing is we're working with our agents. Our claims team has continuously improving and evolving and adapting to the industry. We've got about 175 people in claims, including about 40 field adjusters, and we are proactively communicating with the insureds, proactively working with the agents. But there's a lot of bad actors out there that are intent on getting on a claim and inflating those costs, and that is unfortunate, but that's what's happening. So, no, we're not shutting down counties and zip codes in that regard. We're underwriting it, and we're working with the agents and communicating with them as well as the insurers. It's the claim handling's tricky, but, you know, it's just a lot of people that are jumping on a claim, which is making it expensive, and we're adjusting those and modifying our strategy continuously. But as is the other side, the folks that are intent on getting on a claim.
Are you guys able to change your underwriting such that it could identify potential bad actors?
The attorneys that are putting in the suits, a small group is disproportionate, and Citizens has put out a tremendous amount of information that's very helpful to the investing community as well as it. Everybody, legislators included. That's a small group. The dry out and the plumbers, it's a small group that is abusing the process. And when we come across fraud, we do share it with the state. But in many cases, what a lot of people call AOB fraud, it's not AOB fraud. It's not fraud. It's just people getting on claims and unnecessarily, in my opinion, raising the costs associated with that. So, yes, we're doing what we can, but these folks are out there and they're doing some very effective marketing in many different regards to get on claims. And it's not just Federated National. It's not just Federated National. This is an industry issue, so it's everywhere.
Okay. And then given the competitive environment, how have you seen your homeowners policy retention change? And I think you said you're writing $2 million of new business a week. How much of that is through Advantage? How much is that through GEICO?
In terms of the retention, we typically are around 90%. It bumps up a point or two or down a point or two based on, you know, it's always moving up and down, but I would call it on average 90%. In terms of Allstate, they're our largest producer by far. Obviously our growth with everybody has slowed, including with Allstate. And with GEICO, they're writing Florida of about $200,000 a week, and then non-Florida, another $25,000 to $50,000 a week. So that's we'd like to see that increase, but that's where we're currently at.
Do you have a number for the Advantage per week?
I don't have that in front of me. It's about $120 million book. With them, and I'll follow up with you on that, Samir.
Okay.
But it's typically about 20% of a new production, so call that around $400,000 a week, $450,000 a week. But I'll get a better number for you.
Okay. And then the reversal of the profit commission in the quarter, did that deplete all the accrued profit commission on the quota share? And then I guess second question on that is, how should we think about how you'll book the next two quarters with respect to ceded premiums as it relates to this profit commission or experience account?
Yeah, Samir, that did reverse it, the balance to zero. And then in terms of the next two quarters, just like we've done the previous six quarters, we'll go ahead and calculate what the profitability of the quota share is after Q1 and after Q2, and we'll adjust our numbers accordingly.
Okay. And then the commission income was down quite a bit. What's causing that?
There's a little bit of variability in that account quarter to quarter. Part of that is the changing commission rates within our five programs. In auto, we do have our agency income running through there again. That can vary quarter to quarter. In terms of looking at that, I would also look at the full year where we had pretty significant revenue growth there, and that's when you look at it for a full year, some of that variability kind of stabilizes.
Okay, and we shouldn't project off of the latest quarter. Sounds like
I would project out looking at the full year.
Okay.
I do anticipate it being a little bit more steady in 2017.
Okay. And then the auto business production was down quite a bit. I think you alluded to a program running hot. Can you just expand?
On that, Samir, we have five different programs. Unfortunately, two of them we did turn off. We have three running. There's some challenges in the auto program. So from an underwriting perspective, we did not make money in 2016. However, from an MGA perspective, we did. And on a consolidated basis, I would say it was slightly profitable. However, we need to do better. We need to have an underwriting profit. As you know, it's a heavy quota share program, and our reinsurance partners need to be profitable on that program for us to sustain it. So we're tweaking the existing programs. But we think we got rid of, some of those other ones that we got rid of, we didn't see the opportunity for improvement. We need to do better with auto, but on a consolidated basis in 16, slightly profitable, but we need to focus in on that underwriting profit. We need to do a better job there.
Okay, and you guys Go ahead. I was just going to ask, what should we expect in 2017 in terms of the size of the book?
What
are you guys looking at that?
It's a tough question because in terms of gross written, it's at $70 million. If, like I said, with some of the underwriting challenges, if we lose the reinsurers on some of those programs, that book could decrease. But if we can figure, we think we've identified the challenges, we need to make sure we can not only renew those programs but also grow those programs. So I don't want to give you a number. It could be $50 million or it could be $100 million. There's a wide variance there. And I apologize that I'm not giving you a better number. Our intention is to grow it. We see some great opportunities, but we need to make sure our reinsurance partners are on the programs, and we need to make sure they're profitable as well.
Okay. And then the problems that you've identified, what kind of problems?
Some of the general agents just were not generating the business that was sustainable in a profitable manner. Some of the other ones are clearly rate. I think Samir, you're very deep in the industry. You know that frequency and severity on auto claims is an industry event, primarily associated with distracting driving. So once again, how do you resolve that issue? Until people are not distracted, that's going to continue, and you need additional rate. So we've taken it rate and are requesting rate on these programs.
Okay, and what are you guys booking it at right now?
Gross loss ratio, do you have that?
Going forward, what are you guys going to book it at?
Say that question again?
Gross loss ratio, what are you booking?
Oh, we're roughly around 90%.
Okay.
Through 2016. And we do expect in 2017 to kind of lower that as we implement some of the things that Mike was referring to.
All right, thanks. I'll requeue.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Greg Peters from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
I just have one question for you. And I've noted your commentary around the rate increase that you were able to achieve last year in Florida and the expected rate increase you hope to achieve in 2017. And I'm just curious about your perspective of how your competitors are responding to the same pressures that you're seeing. And if they were taking rate last year, and if you're seeing a flood of other companies filing for rate increases so far in 2017.
Sure. Good question, Greg. And to that, I think we're a little ahead of the curve. I think we're a little ahead of the curve in taking a lot of reserves, which is unfortunate to our shareholders in Q2 and Q3. I think we're a little ahead of the curve in terms of taking rate, which from our policyholders' perspective is unfortunate. But this is needed. This is the AOB is the driver. What are others doing? I see a lot of people starting to take rate more frequently. However, I think it's happening slow. So with that, what occurs? And I think some people are trying to hold on to market share. And I think when you're holding on to market share with rate that's too low, that could create a big problem. So once again, the industry had a bad year, Florida property. And unless there's something that fixes it, the answer is rate. But I think that it's well documented that Demotech had multiple conversations with all the carriers in the industry. And their question is this: what are your results? And what are you doing to improve your results? You can't just downstream money into an underwriting loss. What are you doing to prevent an underwriting loss on an ongoing basis? That's the challenge. And I don't know that there's any other answer to the increased expenses on these claims other than taking rate. So I don't think that the industry can fight it. I think it's here, and I think you're going to see more people taking rate.
Just as a follow-up to that, Mike, the retention rate in the state of Florida for residential homeowners has been somewhat unusual compared with most of the rest of the country, and I suppose that stems from this, long track record of cyclicality on availability of homeowners in your state. And I guess if the market is going to be taking rate in 2017, will it really lead to dislocation? Or will the residential homeowners, just hunker down and accept it and move on?
Well, I think it's a combination, Greg. That's a great question. So you see a lower retention rate in Florida because of the dislocation, because of the large amount of companies that have come and gone and have changed their rates significantly. You don't have the brand loyalty in Florida like you do some of these other states. A lot of these other states, the big boys are there, and they have a brand loyalty based on a number of things, but I'd call it brand exposure. So what will rate do? I think if you have a rate, generally, I'll tell you, I like to maximize our rates at no more. I try to prevent policyholders from getting anything more than a 9.9% rate increase on these big rate increases, because it lessens the impact to them, it lessens the impact to the agents, us, and so on. So, some people will shop it. Some people will shop it if you increase their premium a dollar. But I think 5.6% in 2016, I think that's reasonable. That should minimize the disruption and appears to be doing so. And I think 6.5% in 2017, if that gets approved, I think that should minimize our disruption as well. So you got to ease these things in. And the legislators and the OIR, they get called when you see big rate increases, and they don't like getting that from policyholders. So I think it's politically correct as well to implement those rate increases gradually.
Mike, in your opening comments, or maybe it was in one of your answers, you spoke of work going on the legislative side to correct AOB. It's my impression, and correct me where you're wrong, where I'm wrong, but it would be my impression that the likelihood that something happens on a legislative front in 2017 is probably low. Am I misreading this situation, or is really 2018, a more likely target for some sort of reform?
Greg, unfortunately, I agree with you. I don't see AOB being fixed in 2017. The industry is putting up multiple proposals. I think the Department of Insurance, the OIR, has been fantastic. I think Citizens has been fantastic. Making public information public, educating people. However, there's a lot of people that don't look at it in the same lens and are absolutely against resolving AOB and the drivers, such as one-way attorney fees. I put the probability of something changing in 2017 at very remote, at best. And there's actually proposals out there to that could amplify AOB. The industry, the plaintiff's industry is very strong, and there's some proposals out there. I don't think that's going to happen either. I think AOB is going to stay as is, and I think rate is a burden that will be carried by our policyholders and all policyholders in the state of Florida, perhaps in 2018 or beyond if rates continue to go up. Would you then see some type of adjustment or fix in the legislative body? That's my personal opinion.
Perfect. Thanks for the answers.
Thanks, Greg. Have a good day.
Our next question comes from the line of Doug Ruth from Lennox Financial Services. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. The $590 million AOB, is that are you attributing that all to 2016?
There's an industry, this is statutory. It's an industry number that I have, and I have it actually in front of me. It's $576 million. So basically the net income in the industry, statutory this is, of the Florida carriers is down 89.6%. It's down $576.3 million. So this is off of statutory filings. So there's been a massive erosion in underwriting profit in Florida in 2016, correct.
Is that from the five public companies?
No, this is from the 62 companies that write property in the state of Florida. This was released by SNL on Tuesday.
Okay. What is the company's statutory surplus at this point?
So year-end 2016, FNIC is $141 million, MNIC $31
million. Okay. And do you have any estimates of what it might be at different points in 2017? Well,
I don't know that we have that at our fingertips, but based on 2017, we see what do shareholders expect from us? They want a net income to be positive. They want book value to increase. And absolutely, when you see how it eroded in 16 versus 15, I can't tell you what's going to happen with Mother Nature, but obviously 2016 we had a lot of tornadoes, hail, and multiple hurricanes. That happened in 2016. I don't know what that will do in 2017. AOB, that's real. You're talking, you know, attritional loss ratio up $30 million, and I'm telling you we're taking rate. A good chunk of that will earn out correctly in 2016. So I think from an underwriting perspective, you're going to see a huge improvement. And from a net income perspective, I think you're going to see a huge improvement.
Okay. And what is the status of Monarch at this point?
Well, Monarch, you know, is unfortunately not growing like it should be. It's about a $12 million book. We're only writing about $100,000 a week of new business. The program is a fantastic program. Unfortunately, the pricing's still a bit above the market. If AOB continues to be a problem, which I believe to be the case, the market should move to where Monarch is. We're evaluating and looking at Monarch's program in terms of the pricing, trying to penetrate the market better, but we don't want to be foolish and buy into the market at an unsustainable rate. So from an underwriting perspective, we're extremely disciplined. We're deploying that capital wisely. However, from a shareholder perspective, it's very disappointing because we have capital in there that has not been deployed and is not generating the business we want it to. So it's very frustrating. However, we're being disciplined in our approach because we want to write profitable, sustainable business. I'm extremely excited about Monarch because it's locked and loaded, ready to go, and we want to penetrate the market. I think that as this market shifts a bit,
which absolutely appears to be underway, I think Monarch is extremely well positioned.
Are you able to quantify how much above the market Monarch might be?
Well, it still varies, you know, but I would say that unfortunately, you know, you got to be in the top five to be relevant in terms of competitiveness, and Monarch's really not there at this point. So we may still be about 10% above the market, but once again, Doug, there's so many variables there based on the type of construction, based on the year built and square footage, based on the geographic location. So what we're trying to do is sharpen that pencil. We're trying to identify where we can take rates down appropriately, whether it's based on construction type. You know, what can we do? We don't want to be foolish and just say we're going to drop rates 10% to grab it. We're trying, if we can bring rates down 2, 3, 4, 5% in a smart manner, that's what we're trying to do right now. The actuaries are working on the program, but that's how we're looking at the market.
Okay. What do you think is happening with the Demotech ratings now?
Well, so Demotech's under a lot of pressure. They've been in the news, obviously, where they've reviewed the industry. And, you know, they're putting out a report on Monday, is my understanding. I'm not sure exactly what's in that report, but it's going to, I guess, give everyone their year-end, publicize everyone's year-end 2016 rating. You know, Demotech's under a lot of pressure from a lot of different folks. You know, but I think they're concerned with the underwriting profit within the industry. They're concerned with AOB. I think they're concerned with the sustainability of writing business at a low price. They want answers from the carriers, which includes what's your capital, what's your plan of action, what's your rates. So I think that Demotech will impact the market significantly in 2017, primarily with small carriers. And they have repeatedly stated that, you know, they're looking at carriers primarily as it relates to statutory surplus that are on the low ends and other things, high quota shares or perhaps debt, things like that. So I think that will unfold in 2017.
Okay. I got two questions left. What's the size of the staff at this point?
Last number I have is 408 people. By far the largest team is claims.
And we
retain most services in-house, so we can be considered a little heavy on staff, but rather than, even printing, and mailing, we do that in-house. We think it's better control, better quality, and actually better pricing. So we do a lot of things in-house. We have our own field adjusters, desk adjusters, obviously every department, underwriting, marketing, IT, HR, claims, risk, accounting, finance, you name it. We've got all the functions.
Okay. The last thing, you know, I think that the investment community, we've hung in there with you. We've heard the stories, but I could tell you personally, if the management team and the board of directors stepped up and bought some Federated stock, it would really be a big encouragement. It would really show us that you folks have confidence in the future of the company. I think it would just really be a huge deal for us.
Sure, understood. And I can tell you that, when you speak of the board, I think, the board has some pretty good shares within the company. In terms of management, we do as well. In terms of purchasing shares, me personally, I think you're probably aware I have a lot of shares that have vested over the years. As a matter of fact, this week alone, it's costing me $300,000, about $250,000 to $300,000, depending on the price of the stock, to pay the taxes on my shares as they vest. I'm looking at $1 million just in 2016 and then again in 2017 to pay the taxes on shares that vest. I'm very long on the stock. I believe in that absolutely. Plus, in 2016, I bought my options. I believe it was 40,000 options. So I don't know that always goes noticed, but I hear your statement, and I'll share it with the rest of the team.
Okay. Yeah, we've got St. Patrick's Day, so I'm thinking corned beef, cabbage, and Federated stock. I think they all go together pretty well.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you for answering my questions.
Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of David Spear from Nitor Capital. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Good morning, David.
First off, I'll want to commend you guys for the buyback, especially the recent actions. I just want to confirm, so that's an additional $10 million to the $10 million that was announced in November that hasn't been completed yet?
Yeah, let me clarify on that. So March of 16, we authorized, the board authorized $10 million, which was exhausted. In November, it authorized $10 million, which has just expired as of March 1, and that was approximately, what was that, $4 million?
$2.3 million.
I apologize. So that has since expired. So those two, 2.3 and 10 of the 20 that was authorized. The board has just authorized a new one, which hit the wire this morning, $10 million, effective immediately, and that's out there for a year. So thank you.
So there's $10 million. You have the authorization to buy, as of right now, to buy $10
million. Correct.
And how much cash do you currently have at the holdco?
After the downstream, about $35 million. However, once again, we're generating positive cash in our non-statutory entities, primarily the MGA.
Got it. And speaking of the MGA, because I know you mentioned at the Raymond James conference the other day, I think you mentioned that the MGA business is making a lot of money for shareholders. Is there any way you can quantify that number on kind of an isolated basis, what that MGA business generates?
Do you have that in front of
you? We don't have that handy.
It
certainly circle back.
David, it's significant. I mean, if you look at the $65 million in 2015, it was, I believe, around $35 million of that. It's significant. And then also our reinsurance intermediary is very profitable, Century Risk with InsureLink. Those entities, so you're absolutely right, David. There's two sides to our business, the underwriting profit, which has struggled in 2016. But on top of that, we have an MGA that's very profitable.
Yeah, I mean, because you did, because in the presentation, I think one of the items you highlighted is that, you know, you're shifting towards a more fee-based business model. I think that's the way you put it. So I think, especially as shareholders, I think it would be very helpful to kind of illustrate what that model is actually generating or capable of generating, just so we can, you know, have a better understanding in that aspect.
Yeah, very good point, David, and making a note of that. And the products that we do also sell, we're very proud of our partnership with Hiscox, which is a Lloyd's syndicate. It's only about a $3-4 million book. In addition, we have a partnership with Hudson where we sell a liability umbrella, which is about a $3 million book. We're trying to expand that. We're working on a number of initiatives. We would like to offer our partner agents as many products as possible.
Got it. Okay, and then just last one. So you mentioned, I think it was that in 2016, about $30 million was due to, you had a break-even year in 2016, you said. About $30 million was due to attritional loss. So I just want to clarify. I think you then said that for this year, you should, as a result of the rate increases, get about $25 million in additional premium. So, you know, all else being equal, if you were to have, you know, for say the same type of year as you did last year, due to the rate increases, you know, you would have about a $25 million earnings in, let's say, 2017, all else being equal.
Well, once again, the world's not flat.
What I'm saying is if in the exact same year, as a result of the rate increases, you were have the exact same cat losses, et cetera.
Yeah, so the two things we're looking at is you're right, attritional loss ratio, that $25 million of the 5.6%, that will be earning out 100% correct as of August. So let's say that, yes, in a flat year, we'd have that, which takes care of the vast majority of the problem, and then weather. Unfortunately, we did have some weather in Q1. We're looking at it, tornadoes and hail, primarily tornadoes, of about $3 million. So, those are the two items. I think rate solves the 6.5% increase in the attritional loss ratio. You're right. It's just a timing issue.
Got it. Got it. Okay. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward towards the full implementation, hopefully, of that buyback plan. But thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Arash Soleimani from KBW. Your line is open.
Thanks. I just wanted to follow up again on the homeowners growth. So you may have made a comment earlier about the retention in Florida, but the $33.6 million of new business you wrote, I mean, that implies close to about $3 million a week, so that looks like it was a pretty, you know, healthy new business rate, but then, you know, homeowners overall looks like it only grew 8.5%, so it almost implies that retention was, if I look at last year's fourth quarter number, it implies that retention was about 78%. Does that sound right? And if so, why would it have been so low?
Well, there's a couple of things there. So let's say we write 100 policies. That 100 policies are bound. So that's what we'd say when we wrote business. We say, what did the agent bind? Of that, you're talking, you got to take about a 10%, 12% haircut on policies. Maybe someone was buying a home and they did not close on it. Whatever it may be. Maybe they there was a home and we went out and inspected it and we saw a roof that was in bad shape. So immediately you got to take off, let's call it 12 points there. And then from there, if you get down to, let's call it 88, and then you can take off what of those 88 will make it through a renewal offer. And if it's if you take off 10% there, now you're down to, let's just call it 80. So that's how you get there with the math.
But I guess is that rate lower than where you've historically run?
No, we're not seeing it moving much. Our underwriting, those that clear underwriting, has vary, but you know, I would call it 10 to 12%. Some, you know, that don't actually make it through a whole 12-month on their policy for a variety of reasons, and then those that do make it through and then actually renew, I'd say another 10% evaporation. That's
okay.
Been consistent year after year.
Okay. So I guess with that said, like, what was the main driver of the deceleration in the homeowners' growth rate?
Why did we not – what are you saying? Why did we not grow as much in Q4?
Yeah, I'm saying because with the $3 million per week of new business that you did in Q4, the rate of growth seems lower than would have otherwise been expected. So I was just trying to figure out – what was it that caused that? Was it, you know, lower retention? You know, is there something else that was kind of a headwind in the quarter?
Yeah. You know what? I'll go deeper with you, I guess, offline, because I'm not sure I'm following your question 100%. But maybe we'll just follow up afterwards if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. That's.
I'm sorry, Rosh.
It's all right.
Thanks.
And then the other question I had, so just on the rate increases, so you have the 5.6, then you're going to, you know, hopefully get the 6.5. So if you compound the 6.5 over the 5.6, that implies about a 12.5-point combined rate increase. You know, let's say you keep 87% of that because 13% goes to agents. So that gets you to about 10.9. So if you have 10.9, and then I think you said the loss ratio on a gross basis has been up about 6.5 points. So that implies, I guess, 4.4 points of additional margin that you should get once these rates are both fully earned in. Does that jive with how you're thinking about it? About 4 points?
Yep, Arash, that's exactly how I look at it. For the record, the actuaries have got hundreds and hundreds of pages that kind of look at the math a little bit differently, but that's exactly how I look at it. The world's not flat. Other things do come in, additional expenses, savings. So at the end of the day, you're right. We have three expenses. Reinsurance, which has been very favorable for the last 5 years, and I would anticipate this upcoming, as we bind the new CAT program in late May, I'm anticipating flat to an improvement with rates being down a little bit. The acquisition, I don't see any changes in acquisition. So those two items, let's call them flat for simplicity. The attritional loss ratio is our third expense, and you just nailed it. That's exactly it. That's how we're going to recover the deterioration in our underwriting profit, which was driven by one item there, which is the attritional, which is driven by AOB.
Thanks. On the auto combined ratio, I know you said the loss ratio is 90, but what's the combined ratio when you include expenses?
It's significantly higher on a gross basis.
Yeah, it's roughly break even for the year.
So you're saying the 90% loss ratio when you with the expense ratio, when you say break even, you mean it goes to 100% or?
Yeah, I mean when you combine it from a consolidated basis, the combined is roughly 100% when you factor in all the fee income.
Excluding the fee income, just looking at the purely underwriting. So if we pretend there's no fee income, I just wanted to get a sense of what the combined ratio there is.
Generally speaking, I would say it's 110%, generally speaking.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, because not only do we have to have our MGA profitable on the private passenger program, we've got to have an underwriting profit in there as well for our reinsurance partners. You know, but
okay.
there's a lot of accounting in terms of how it's seeded and so on. So you may want to follow up with Eric as well.
Okay. Was that 110 then the gross combined ratio excluding any kind of fee income?
Correct.
Okay. The other question I had, so in terms of Monarch, I know you said the rates still seem like they're above. And if I recall, I think you guys took the rates down by 11% or so, maybe it was 12, 18 months ago.
12% last April, correct.
12% last April. Okay. My question was AOB, I mean, AOB didn't seem like it was getting as much press as it is, you know, the last few months. But are you surprised that rates have not caught up, given that you took your rates down before AOB was as, you know, advertised of an issue?
Well, so AOB we've been talking about for about 2-3 years, but it really bit really hard in 2016. Monarch, we've treated it very gingerly, and we came out, we got it licensed, and in 2015, and we knew we had high rates. But you know, the market moves continuously, so that was part of the strategy. Us bringing rates down 12% at that time, we thought that was correct. Absolutely, in part, because some of the concerns, some of the trends that we had as it related to AOB. So, sure, you always want to launch that perfect product, but it's not that easy. It's usually multiple steps, and it's much easier to step down into the program than to come, and this is the one thing that I try to avoid at all costs, specifically with our state expansion, why we have an MGU as a partner. It's far better to ease yourself into the market than to jump in, buy the market, and then have to take rate to that effect. So we're trying to continue to ease into it.
And when you say ease in, I guess on looking at the homeowner side, you're using the MGU now. Is the plan in the future to just directly appoint independent agents in the other states, since that's probably cheaper from a acquisition cost perspective?
Well, that's a great question. So a couple different things you just asked. So Monarch is Florida, that's direct, et cetera. Non-Florida, now you're switching topics, we do use an MGU, yes. That does cost us money, but we believe it pays for itself by better underwriting results. So FNIC, non-Florida, we do utilize our partner SageShore, and we've given them great latitude, and we're absolutely, they're great operators, great management team, and they execute the plan very well. And they're paid based on profit. So Monarch's looking at state expansion. I'm not sure that we'll be using SageShore for that expansion. That may be direct. We're continuing to look at that. But once again, I would say while SageShore does have higher acquisition expenses, we believe that pays for itself.
Thanks. And I just wanted to move to the ceded premium ratio. So that was 50.5% in the quarter. And So basically that's higher than what I would expect, given that the 30% quota share is has been unwound. And I know you have, obviously, you're ceding about 80% or so on the auto book, but that's still, I guess, only about 10% of the book. So are there any, can you walk us through, are there any unusual adjustments or numbers moving through ceded premiums that are elevating that ratio?
Yeah. Arash, yeah. So there's three things running through ceded premium. One is you mentioned the excess of loss, right? Which that cost is kind of fixed for the reinsurance year, which starts in Q3 of 16, right? And then the second part you mentioned is 75% to 80% heavily our auto business that's heavily ceded, right? And then the last piece. Is the 10% quota share which you know, a part of that is very straightforward, as it's just 10% of what we cede for Homeowners Florida. But then there's the last piece of it does get kind of funky, you know, from an accounting and perspective, which has to do with the profit sharing balance, and that also factors into ceded premiums as well.
And what was the adjustment from the profit sharing balance?
The so if you look at the just overall that both the 30% and the 10% quota share, it was roughly in the quarter $14 million of ceded premiums.
Okay.
Kind of combined both you know the actual ceding of the premiums plus the adjustment around the profit sharing.
Hey, Arash, with that, I mean, you've always got good questions, but you have a lot of questions as well. We've got other callers we don't want to lose. If you don't mind, I'd like to move to the next caller, and then maybe you can follow up with Eric. Is that all right with you?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from the line of Ron Bobman from Capital Returns. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks.
Morning, Ron.
Good morning. A couple of questions to clarify. So I guess most importantly, as it relates to rate action and all of the top in the homeowners business, retention is not whether it's 90 or 80 or 77, basically not seeing sort of any adverse trends given the rate action.
Yeah, unfortunately, Ron, you've got a terrible connection there, but I think you're asking about the retention. So generally, if we write 100 policies, 100 policies are bound. Those that actually go through the first year, the full 12 months, let's take away about 12%. And then, so now you're down to 88. And of the 88 that actually renew, let's just call that roughly 90%, you're down to about 80. So the number 78 to 80% is a reasonable number.
Okay, sorry about the connection. Then my other question really relates to the auto business. Your homeowners business from a premium perspective is multiples the size of the auto business, and the auto business sounds like it may be shrinking, at least as it relates to program count. The profit margin opportunity, the combined ratio margin opportunity is meaningfully higher. It's multiples also superior in the homeowners business potentially as compared to the auto business. And obviously, the homeowners business is your core business, and the potential for profitability is again multiples of the auto business. Given that you're generating, it sounds like, at best break even on a consolidated basis, the auto business, and given even more importantly, the serious challenges that you face in your core homeowners business, as well as the core challenges that the auto experts face and are grappling with in their auto businesses, which is not your core, why are you bothering with an auto business at all?
Sure. So once again, it was hard to hear most of that question, but my understanding is you're asking about why are we in the auto business. You know, what we see as the opportunity is this. The staffing that we have is about 50 people that are committed to our auto program. It's really a fee-based product. So in other words, the staffing is primarily adjusting. They're all, I think 99% of them are, of the staff that we have is associated with adjusting. The business plan is this. Excuse me. We want to make an underwriting profit. For it to be sustainable, we need to make an underwriting profit. However, let's put aside the underwriting profit. The MGA fee that we anticipate, we get 10 points for the fronting and for ULA, unallocated loss adjusting. Our goal is to only use 5 of those points, make 5 points. So make 5 points on that. And if we write it 4-1, that's 20 ROE pre-tax. I think that's attractive. There are challenges, and these programs are heavily reinsured, so they have to be sustainable. They have to be profitable. But absolutely, the fee component is a big part of the attraction that we're looking at. Also, if we can make 5-10 points on the underwriting profit, now you amplify the ROE to a 25 pre-tax. I think those numbers are attractive. You're right. There are challenges, not only in the homeowners business, but also in the auto. We're aware of that, and we think we have the plan
to work through on the homeowner side, and we're working through the auto side as well.
Because of my connection, I'll circle back at another time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Samir Kaur from Capital Returns Management. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to ask you, is any part of the Florida agents' commissions, is any of that based on profitability of the book?
Well, yes and no. And what I mean by that is this. Excuse me. To generate business with us, you're an agent, and we do track your loss ratio. And if you write terrible business, we're going to turn you off. Period. So we it depends on a number of things. So sometimes you can have a shock loss, and if you have a $300,000 liability claim and the agent's only got a $300,000 book, you know, he's fried. So we do look not only at the quantity, we also look at the quality, meaning why does an agent have a loss ratio? We do give incentives, we do give overrides to agents that produce better business. And it's based on a number of things, based on the type of business and the quantity of business, and including we do include the loss ratio of that agent in that analysis.
Okay. And does any part of the expense ratio in this quarter reflect a decrease or reversal of accrued management compensation throughout the year?
Some of it, but I would say I would put that number less than $500,000.
Okay. And just coming up on 6/1, are you guys looking to renew the quota share at all during this renewal? I advise against it. Okay.
No, we're comfortable that XOL can satisfy our needs, and I would say there's a lot of the folks on our program are jockeying to maintain their line and increase it. So I feel very good where we're at.
Okay. And then can you tell us about the progress of your CFO search?
Yeah, we once again, I think Eric's done a fantastic job. We also have three board members, myself and two others that chair of the audit and chair of the board that have conducted a search, and we're very near to disclosing something here in the next couple of weeks. We've got multiple good candidates, including Eric, in there. So we will be making that announcement here. Subject to finalizing everything, but I think that we'll have closure here in the next few weeks.
Okay. And then can you just talk about Q1 cat-related weather or storm weather, what your exposure has been there?
Sure. I would say right now you're looking at $3 million hit, unfortunately, in Q1. That's primarily associated with two storms, one that really impacted most of Florida. That's about $2 million. And we've got claims all over the state, from South Florida to the West Coast, up in the Northeast and the Panhandle. And then we had a separate incident, a separate tornadoes and wind event that came through that literally just went down I-10 from Jacksonville, Tallahassee, Pensacola, into our book in Louisiana. So right now, the rough number I have for you is $3 million.
Okay. And then... in your opinion, do you think Allstate's intention to grow in Florida has anything to do with their view on homeowners' profitability being at a trough level?
I can't tell you what I can't represent Allstate, but based on the financial results of, in my opinion, based on the results of the industry, I don't think that's too inviting for someone to grow in the market if you haven't been in the market. So I don't know specifically their intentions. I think they have an auto book that they do. They're a great partner. They have very big auto book in the state. I think they're the second largest writer. And I'm sure they're just trying to, maintain their presence in Florida and perhaps round out that account. I'm not threatened by it. I'm not. I can't say enough good things about our partnership with those folks. I'm not threatened by it. I don't see it as a huge appetite, and I don't think their product is overly competitive. They'll pick up some policies, yes, but I'm not threatened.
Okay. And then, given the expertise of some of the Florida homeowner specialists, do you think it would make sense for Allstate to potentially acquire a Florida specialist to fulfill this aspiration?
I can't speculate on that. That's a great question, and I can't speculate on that. I'm very proud of what we do. I'm very proud of our partnership with Allstate, as I am with Geico and Progressive, that rates business for us down in Florida, and our independent agents. So I think we're going to continue doing what we do, and regardless of how Allstate penetrates the market, I don't think it's going to be big, but I can't speculate on what their intentions are.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the question.
And it looks like we have no other questioners in the queue at this time, so I'd like to turn the call back over to management for closing comments.
Sure. Thank you. I just want to thank everybody for their time today and follow-up questions. Eric and I are always available. Our contact information is out there, and wish everyone a great day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for your participation in today's conference call. This now concludes the program, and you may now disconnect at this time. Everyone have a great day.